another colleague from the procurement form working group on this call. If anyone, I'd give them an opportunity to add something, but I think that's the gist of our conference. Thank you very much, Chair.
Well, the team will entitle the 5 minutes, but I can't decide for you. There's nobody in your group that wants to speak that I know of, so can we move on? There's somebody in the chat who wants to speak. Who would they be? We need to move on. Sir, can I give you something to respond to my... Who would this be? Advocate Nandipa, are you from which structure?
Good morning, sir. I'm out of it in Taruba.
Yeah. What structure are you from?
From the military veteran.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. You can read your proposal. So I don't know what you want to say, but go ahead.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to appreciate that. But as I'm looking at the input, if it's an extra, please forgive me. But there's an interesting inclusion in the definition of military veteran clause 1. And the way I look at it, it seems to be extracting just the A part of the definition of the military veteran from section 1 of the Act. And I'm wondering if that would then not pose a challenge, because the definition is threefold. That's one. The second one, say, if you allow me, is a plea. Which I provided in writing, again, with regards to military veterans' experience of writing regulations, that we have students that Section 58 of Clause 58, should not only confine itself to two ministries. The experience that was gathered during the military veterans' regulations development process signified that you need to look at the organs of state that are affected by that particular benefit. And we believe that the same approach we adopted in developing delegated military in the state, because by their very data that triangulate across various institutional institutions. And we're using the military veterans benefit regulations as an example. And lastly, probably, if you allow, is the reference that we had made to consultations with the information regulator, especially with issues that deal with data privacy, data, because that's the institution that is filled with that responsibility. That is the territory that the consultation be done by the unit on any matter that deals with data, so that we are not superfluous in dealing with that. Thank you very much, sir, for allowing us, and thank you for the great effort done by the National Treasury in this regard. We're looking forward to further engagement with other issues. Thank you, and thank you all.
Thank you. I hope you raise these issues between the 8th and the 10th, right? And in your letter to us, it was referred to the committee, these other issues were raised. But no doubt, Tracy will reply. Now over to members, and then we'll come back to Tracy, and then we'll decide on the procedure from here with from your end spot. Dennis? Yep.
Yeah, morning, Chairperson. Just gone off in a good afternoon, Chair. And thank you for the opportunity. Before you accuse me of being too white again, let me just try and adjust my filters on the video. There we go. Good.
You were very much both.
Jay, yeah, I think that you preempted some of my comments at the beginning, because let me start by first of all appreciating the manner in which this has been handled, because I think that Treasury's level of consultation and the interactions with the stakeholders that have raised their concerns is most welcome, and it really shows a maturity of legislative process. So I mean, it was this committee that suggested it, and I think the way it has been carried out and take forward, I think is very constructive. And let's face it, this is a contentious piece of legislation that requires such a level of engagement. Having that chair, I mean, look, having the documents sent into us last night at 5 p.m. As you pointed out, Chair, this is complex stuff. But it's certainly a higher grade, and I know that you've said that we've got a week now to digest what's been sent to us. I do think the slides were quite brief, and a lot of the presentation that was given today presupposed a level of understanding of what went on in the discussion. So I think that the slides in the presentation were certainly a lot more meaningful to Treasury and to perhaps the stakeholders that participated than it was to members. And I mean, I sat last evening trying to work through and cross-reference between the slides and the supporting documents of the Act, and it just became, you know, quite messy and hard to follow in certain instances. And realistically, I mean, you know, getting it last night was not helpful to really going into depth into this. Now, I mean, I realize this committee has in the past worked with considerable agility and we've accommodated late submissions and last minute things. But you know, I'm aware many other committees required presentations to be submitted a week before the time and so on. So I just wanted to put that on record, Chair, although, as you said, you know, we've got some more time to get our heads around it. And I think I'm going to need that because this is serious high-grade stuff. There's a lot of things that need to be understood. I do want to just, you know, take a moment to consider the responses overall. And I'm not going to get into individual issues, but I mean, it seems like it's common cause that they're going to be another round of fairly substantial changes to the bill before it goes through. And of course, that's going to precipitate a referral back to the National Assembly. So there is going to be a backwards and forwards process again. And looking at our timelines and the programs of ourselves and the National Assembly, you know, Chair, I look forward to hearing what your proposals are in terms of taking this bill forward, because I do think that the call has been made by a number of people that this needs to be, you know, taken back to NEDLAC. I'm not sure that NEDLAC's the be-all and end-all in terms of the, you know, further consultation process. But that's the call that's been made. I think that it's been repeated by many of the stakeholders, and I think that Treasury made a comment in their presentation that, you know, that's for Parliament to decide, which is us. And you know, invariably when Treasury makes something like that, it means, you know, we probably agree, but it's verging into the political space, and we don't want to shout too much about it. But Jeff, based on these substantial changes to Chapter 4. That were made in committee in the National Assembly. And I think Mr. Eppel made the point earlier on that, you know, when we're making kind of broad decision changes here and proposing changes, you don't actually get to see the final text. So the National Assembly proposed changes in their committee, which then resulted in the A Bill and the B Bill coming through, and yes, we've got our heads around that process now. But, you know, they ended up voting on a bill that they hadn't seen the final text of, and that's where, you know, the differentiation between single words like may and must becomes important, and that's why we do clause by clause. So I do think that there's substantial value in considering a reference of this thing back to NEDLAC. And I think, you know, just noting the volume of changes that have been made already and the further changes that are now proposed, we're going to end up with a very, very different looking bill at the end of the day from what entered the National Assembly and went through the first rounds. And I believe that there is still a lot of space to go in terms of getting an appropriate bill. And I mean, it's important if one considers the budget of national, provincial and local governments, all combined in terms of their procurement processes. If we don't get this right, we are going to start spending for quite some time. And I do think that the constitutional issues that have been raised are material enough that it does need further discussion, certainly to bring people onto the same page. Because, you know, if you read between the lines of some of the inputs that we've had today, you can already see the litigation loading, which is going to delay and throw huge stumbling blocks into the procurement processes once this bill, if it does get passed, gets passed and enacted and put into place. So, Chair, I want to really thank, again, just in closing, all of the stakeholders, because they've certainly enriched the discussion and helped us to hopefully get to a point where we'll have a better product at the end of it. I want to thank Treasury, Pierre, and yourself, Chair. Well done. Thank you. I think I've given a heart attack by saying, there we go.
So, I'm looking for who wants to speak. I see there's nobody else here. All right, in that case, I'll come in. So firstly, yes, I agree with you, Dennis. I actually got the report on Monday afternoon, the text one. We got a slide presentation yesterday. It was a lot of work. And Willie approached me on Friday. Was it on Thursday? I can't recall. I said, look, we can't deliver it by Friday, 12 o'clock, which is what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I said, I understand. They had 3 days of sitting. So, and I think your concerns will sort of have more substance if we didn't have a long time. So now that the National Assembly is meeting, I think for a 2-day sitting, I think 2 days in Kululeka, I'm not sure, this month and towards the third week or so, or was it the middle of May. We've got plenty of time. This is the only bill we have. Moreover, we have a few plenaries in the week ahead. So we get 25 hours a day, 8 days a week if you want, metaphorically speaking. Oh, by the way, Caroline, when I referred to your notes, I wasn't literally referring to your notes. What I meant to say, you weren't excluded because, okay, of the glasses you've got, because I hadn't seen the glasses or your notes. So obviously it's a metaphorical statement, not a physical one. So, you know, metaphorically speaking, we can sit all the time. So I didn't think the issue. This is just like an initial product. We're just looking at what came out of the 8th or the 10th process. So yes, it was hard to follow. I also had the same issue. But we've got plenty of time. And the thing that strikes me, National Treasury and the stakeholders, is it like a completely, we've never come across this in the NCOC in this 5-year term. I don't know that many other committees have come across this. This is in where, you know, so many changes are required. But so what exactly happened on the NSI? I don't know. But they applied their mind. I do not know, frankly, what else here are now. We've been told that the NA voted on a bill that they never saw. How is that possible? So Frank, can you explain how it is possible that a National Assembly Committee and the House can vote on a bill they didn't see? On the final text issue, yes, I think the stakeholders are right. They need to see the text. Because ultimately, that's what counts. Not the policy responses from Treasury or the CAF for any word. And we've gone to see the text too and match that with what they said they're going to do and what we think they should do between now and the time we start looking at the bill clause by clause. I don't see the need to take any final decision right now. We just started. We don't know where we're going to go with this bill. But we're not going to have this bill or we're going to have this bill. I also want to alert members, don't think it's going to be easy. if we suspend this process and, you know, you're going to get a new set of MPs, probably very much younger, very few will come from this committee, and even people who come back from this committee often get allocated or deployed to other committees. Like our work, she could become a chair of a committee because she's now no more serving the first term, right? And she could be deployed to international work circles and so on. So I think the work that has already been done by the NA committee, that too might change. The last experience was only Noxy got back in that committee. And on our side, the only two people who were in the finance committee before, that's Dickie Lady and myself. And we were on the other side, in NA side. So I don't buy this thing that, you know, let's pack it off and let the next term of Parliament decide. There's no reason for it at this stage. If we do decide not to do anything, there might be a more substantial set of reasons for it. I think there's general agreement, or there hopefully will be in the collective, that we see this as a transitional bill or a temporary bill, whatever it is, and that within 18 months or so, you know, the bill will be reviewed with the suggestion that it be taken to the NEDLAC process. So that's a compromise we can strike between sending the bill back and passing it blindly, which you're not going to do anyway. I'm not sure that the interpretation right there that, you know, National Treasury is saying, yeah, we agree with the Senate back in the day, but they pass it back to us and say, you know, Parliament must decide, because that's what they think. It's also a diplomatic way of saying, well, we don't agree, but let Parliament make the decision. It doesn't matter what place you go. It's our call as a committee. We follow it. So at this stage, I can't see the need to call off this bill. And we're going to do our job. What? 21st of May is the last sitting, I think, of the Parliament. We've got plenty of time in between the election campaign. It's not as if we sit the whole day in the election campaign. And mind you, we can meet in the evening and we can check whether people are available and take into account parliamentary political party responsibilities. Now, there are some issues that I don't think we need endless discussions about. On the matter of process, no matter how long we sit here, we will still have disagreements. No matter how many workshops you have with the stakeholders, you're still going to have disagreements. Some of the stakeholders' meetings interests contradict with others who are stakeholders here. Furthermore, we can have constitutional workshops after constitutional workshops. These issues are not going to be agreed to. As I said at the outset, the Constitutional Court is the final decision maker on the constitutional issues. Unless the majority thinks otherwise, I don't think we need to kill ourselves over that. We've covered the ground. The state law advisors have approved the bill. Fine, Frank and them, the legal services have approved the bill as legally and constitutionally sound, and so has Treasury lawyers. So I think that the real thing, if people want to, is to take it to court. There will be legal challenges. Not all of these are dictated by constitutional and legal preoccupations. There are class and other interests involved. Let's get real, can it? There are class and other interests involved. There are people who mean well and present their arguments along legal through constitutional grounds and technical grounds, but you're not unbiased. And you know the way unbiased. So, you know, I mean, we've been through this before. Let it go to the court if that's what people want. Where there are not constitutional issues but other legal challenges, then again, the court must decide. We must decide on the basis of the policy issues, the usefulness of the law, and so on. Now, we have got a legal expert here, and I would like him to come in. So the first proposal I've got is that if Fred Jenkins under the pressures of almost the penultimate stage of the 2005-year parliament, has about the time he wants to meet with the stakeholders and discuss the legal and constitutional issues, I think we can give you a mandate to do that, but you're not obliged to. What we are obliged to do, and we can talk offline, is to come here on Tuesday morning and deal with all the constitutional issues. Doesn't matter what tragedy says, they be executive. We are parliament. Right? You must take, obviously, as you do, the positions of the legal services in your parliament. So you can say, here we agree with the stakeholders, here we agree with the National Treasury, and these are the issues that need to be addressed. And so we would like, frankly, to come back, whether it's feasible for us to do that amount of work, given what else we have to do by next Tuesday, 10 o'clock. Then on the issue of unfunded mandate, I don't think we need a long discussion. Treasury, I've been around for thousands of years, and I can tell you that 90% of the time, when a government department says there are limited financial implications or there are no financial implications, that's never worked out like that. I find it hard to believe the credibility of what you say on financial implications. But now on a matter of unfunded mandate, basically, one of the issues we can do, and we don't do that, because the memo of the bill is not subject to legal scrutiny, in the sense of you can effect changes and it has any power of the sort you have in the bill with a particular provision. But still, we can change the memo perhaps to make clear that you had it from. On the financial cost as a whole, I think, yes, you must have some ballpark figure, because that's reasonable in my view. These are my tentative views. Now, I'm interested in your sensitivity. I don't know. My initial response was just to give some idea. We've got another. We can't waste this. What is it? 40 minutes left, but we can't just use it for the sake of using it. But there are some things that occur to me personal, in a cursory response, on a tentative response, which is that on the one hand, I don't think it's fair to expect you to have a finite definite figure of the cost implications. But overall, for the speed of government, it's impossible, it's not fair. On the matter of the public procurement office in National Treasury, so now I don't think it's an issue. I think people are wanting too many changes in this bill, some that don't fall within your portfolio. And it's not an omnibus bill. It affects a whole lot of other departments, true, but you don't need to take on the responsibility of other departments, and you have no right to do so on the eve of the election. So no changes can be effected in this process that have implications for other departments that you haven't consulted. So let's be clear about that. I think our report on this committee will have to, if we go over this bill, will have to be quite long, and it has set out all these things. Remember, a report is not legally binding in the sense of a clause in a bill, right, that relates to government act. So we can recommend a whole lot of things, but we should do so, and we should debate it in Parliament if we get there, and so on. On the things that I don't understand, Christian, some of the mistakes that have been made on the NA side and yourself as the department could have been easily avoided. They took the ones who just make the changes, but wrong prospecting for beneficial ownership and so on, so unnecessary stuff. On the register of prohibited persons, I see what you say. We need some such thing. But you expect you to have it in the sense that some of the stakeholders are doing, I think, are unreasonable. The expectations are unreasonable. But you should also, you've given a lot, quite a lot in. Especially you've given in more than I imagined it would before we asked you to meet with them. So I'm really surprised how far you've gone. And I think we welcome it. But the final test is the test, what you actually say. And if you start working on these things, then we go on to I think I'll stop there for now because my views are basically sensitive. And I think that my overall view is, for what it's worth for now, I'll read all the stuff properly and so on, is that actually you've been far more conciliatory to Treasury than the stakeholders have been. The National Research Foundation wants to offer their services. You also understand it's the same state that's not a private sector entity. It also has its biases, in due respect to the individual. Everybody has their biases. But, you know, I don't think Parliament can describe the national treaty. Who they should draw on, right? You should make a claim. And even the who is in Parliament now. So if the NRF is going to offer any services, it's not because of budget. And they have offered these services by engaging with unions. So, you know, I think we've gone very far with engaging with civil society. I'm not sure what more they expect of us. What more you expect of us? Right? Unless there's something we should be doing that we're not doing, you can invite me offline if you like. I don't know that we can sit any further with them. And if we spend another 6 months here, I'm sure many of the issues will be less. They're ideological sort of issues. They are related to material interests of people consciously or unconsciously. They're related to notions of what transformation. They're related to issues about the capacity of the state. Yes, somebody raised that. Our report is saying we express serious concern about the capacity of national treasury to do these things. There is no phase. I've tried, by the way, maybe you know the story, but you know the story, but not the speech. I've tried, and Attorney General was speaker, we raised the telephone. But you know what? You don't just put financial implications on those, you put down a capacity to implement, and even the elements of our program to implement. You might recall, I said this before to our committee members, with the Child Justice Act, you refused to protest them, which we don't think that's our really, we told this is the Department of Justice, we don't think it's going to. So we delayed it for 3 months or something, until they came with a program. And even then, by the way, they weren't able to implement that. So I don't have any illusions in the capacity of the state. But, on the other hand, I don't think it's a failed state that can do these things. The matter is of phasing it and so on. We would like, maybe let's tell you now, we'd like you to give us the elements of your program. And you've got some time to do it. This will come towards, you know, it's not next Tuesday, the following week and so on. So, nothing stops the stakeholders. These are open meetings. They're free to observe, but we now have to move into the committee stages from next Tuesday. Right. Can we get responses from members? Frank Jenkins first. Frank, please go ahead. And answer that question, do you want to convene a workshop? Or do you want to just get into a legal opinion? It's your fault.
I'm better with legal opinions than workshops. Chairperson, I can participate in a workshop, but I'm not going to organize it. And I need mandates for that. And I'm really quite occupied in the office. But if it needs to be done, I can participate, Chairperson. I've got just two issues I want to
address. If it needs to be done, it can only be done by part of it. And the stakeholders. So, colleagues from the state civil society need to know, and they're the experts, some of them are lawyers. It's now in our hands.
Yeah.
Better or for worse. And there's an election coming up, and they can also make their choices about the way you respond to this bill on that matter. So, when I'm talking about a workshop, I'm asking you whether the legal services unit feels the need for it, do you have the capacity, and I get what you say. If you change your mind, you leave me offline and we'll sort it out. But for now, there's going to be no workshop, right? We've been clear, right? Now, what we want from you is what we ask. Can you deliver that by Tuesday?
Yes, Chair. I've looked through National Treasury's issues. I've looked through the constitutional issues. I personally do not have much to add to the legal opinion and how they address various issues, even the issues of corporate governance, government, as well as the division of duties between the public procurement officer, provincial treasuries, national treasuries. I haven't found anything of concern, constitutional concern there, Chair. But what I do need to address the committee on two things, Chair. One is the issue of unfunded mandates. It is a bit of a chicken and egg situation as well, Chair, because if you recall, when we receive a annual performance plan or a annual report, strategic plan of a department, usually there's a chapter in there of all the applicable legislation that department needs to implement. And the budget will then also flow from those duties of implementing this legislation. So legislation that's not operative is not always getting a budget. So sometimes the budget will follow legislation coming into effect, and other times maybe the coordination will be tighter or better, but passing legislation results in budget allocation, Chairperson, because there's an issue of legal compliance which cannot be circumvented in an annual performance plan. So I'm probably just confusing them more than providing clarity there, Chair. I hope not, but the issue of a memorandum to the bill setting out financial obligations, and yes, it is a bit passing or kicking for touch when the department says there's no financial implications when the tribunal is being established and so forth, but it's definitely not an accurate issue, and there's usually what's called a socio-economic impact assessment that Department of Planning and Monitoring in the Presidency does, and I think stakeholders and National Treasury have access to that. The committee can also have access to that. That explains a little bit more what will happen when this bill is implemented. I haven't seen it for this bill, but it's a cabinet requirement. It's not a rules, a parliament requirement for department to give us the so-called SIA, the socio-economic impact assessment on legislation. Chair, so that's the one area. The other area is the role of parliament and provincial legislatures in this bill. Chair, when the Public Finance Management Act was passed in 1999, already at that stage there was a recognition of the constitutional principle of separation of powers, and that's the crux around this specific issue that was raised by stakeholders. So the Public Finance Management Act says it only applies in a very limited respect to provincial legislatures and to parliament because of the issue of separation of powers. And that was then giving a bit more effect to by parliament itself when it passed the Financial Management of Parliament Act in 2009. It was a court case of Limpopo Premier, then Treasury refers to that in the document as well, said that provinces can't provide for their own financial management, it's a national competency. So we included the provincial legislatures within the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act then, and we removed all references in the Public Finance Management Act to the provincial legislatures and to Parliament. So Chair, when we're looking at the Public Procurement Bill before us, what Chapter 4 is doing is basically fulfilling the place of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. So Chapter 4 sets the preferential policy framework there for Parliament and provincial legislatures, much like the figures that Act did, which will be repealed once the Public Procurement Bill becomes an Act. So, Chair, the first point I want to make is that the Public Procurement Bill, as it becomes an Act, cannot apply wholesale to Parliament. Parliament and provincial legislatures, because of the separation of powers doctrine in the Constitution, which was recognized by the Constitutional Court already back in the certification judgment, and because of that principle, Chairperson, Parliament is entitled constitutionally to provide and to determine its own internal arrangements and proceedings. It's also empowered to provide for its own financial management, including supply chain management. But that, in our Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act, says that it must comply with the framework in the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. So, in other words, that will change to our Parliament's supply chain management policy, regulations, not policy, but it's regulation. Parliament must actually do its own preferential procurement according to regulations that must be published. That needs to comply with Chapter 4, and we need Chapter 4 for that. chairperson. But it can't be that, for instance, chapter 5 of the book also applies to Parliament. That would intrude in Parliament's constitutional area, and it would be actually unconstitutional. So regardless of the challenges such a separation creates, it's something that we must blame on the ancient wisdom of people who created the separation of powers. I think it's the French principle that was taken over by the Americans when they did the 4th of July. So, chairperson, where we are today, I don't see that as a constitutional concern. It's an issue, but it's not a concern. So for that, for now, Chair, that's my input. I will look at the other issues, and I will be here on Tuesday when we meet if there are more questions. Thank you, Chair. Chair, last thing. There's the issue of the bill, the public procurement bill, not serving before the selection, the standing committee and the National Assembly. Chair, is not correct. The Standing Committee on Finance did look at a draft bill that was prepared for it. It did not have the ISBN numbers on, but that was then carbon copied into the formal B version of the bill, which was before the National Assembly. But the Standing Committee did have a draft final bill. It has the final bill before it when it adopted its report and that bill, according to which I was there.
I've heard of a committee not seeing a final draft. It's kind of out of the form. Okay, now Tracy, can you please reply to the issues raised briefly? I want to say something also before you do. So one of the stakeholders thinks that 300 page plus report. I'm not sure what he expected as a reply. Maybe another 300 pages reply. That would be unfair, unreasonable, really. Because those 300 pages, Musa gave the 150 page one, etc. here. Yeah? And so on and so on. And look at all these stakeholders, we have 100 pages. You also postponed, and we agreed on the minister's request, not because the minister agreed, but it seemed reasonable to postpone our meeting for a week because you had to leave the provinces. And there's many, many submissions that you had to go through there too. So I don't think this committee feels badly, but if you've got the time, some stage you can reply to the stakeholder concerned, even if it's after Parliament rises. I just think I should say that because I think you've done a lot of work for you. I'm not a big fan of yours when it comes to policy issues, as you know, but on work ethic, and as I've said, you were far more conciliatory overall, unless there are things we don't see you in. You're not politicians, not in a sense we politicians, but you also got your biases and so on. But I think you all have done very good work. And you're far more conciliatory to please get every chance in my notes than I imagined you would be. And some things seem very straightforward to me, but let me be careful for what I say at this time. That we don't need endless discussion. Now, Frank, on the issue you just mentioned, I'm very clear about that latter part. About the separation of powers issue. We're not going to cover that endlessly, colleagues. Members of this parliament also can take a vote to court, right, if they want, from different parties. So I don't think we need to endlessly engage on what Frank says. It's very clear to me. The chair, the co-chair of the financial management of parliament committee is right here in our committee anyway. Although she's not feeling great as she's been, but we're grateful that she's here. Okay. I just want to say on the price thing, I'm glad it's been inserted very quickly, but let's see how you're doing it. On the applicability of Parliament, that's straightforward, we've covered that. On the overlaps between Chapter 4 and 5, I want to look at that more carefully. On whistleblowers, colleagues may think about this. We agree. We can be very strong in our report. And we're asking the Treasury maybe to do a cross-reference to that. Protected by Public Disclosures Act and the bill that's coming, right? But that's not something we can do here. I don't know what people are wanting. So can you advise us on those sort of issues? We agree. We can put a very strong provision in the court, I mean, in our report. I have in two structures that I serve in raised the state several times for the shocking failure of the state to protect decent, innocent people. And so all this blabbering, the private sector won't even employ these people. You know, other sectors, oh no, we can't take that person, it's not kosher. So, you know, I personally feel very strongly, I've raised it in various, two forums at least, I've raised it every now and then with the people that are decision makers at the top. And, you know, on that issue, we are very clear at the palace, nobody's going to disagree. But the demand that is being inserted here, because it's going to take a while for the bill to come from justice, I think is not reasonable. Colleagues, just think about it. Can we also review that quickly? Those are like the quick ones, the ones that are being easily dismissed. I don't know if I can have the time, but I'll draw up a list of four or five issues that are straightforwardly. Frank, can we go ahead and do something like we asked to do our whistleblower? How would we do it? I mean, how would we preempt? There's already an act, we all process them to that act. If it's inadequate, now report to the state. Right? When you think about it, don't answer now necessarily.
Yeah, I'll think about it.
And I was going to say, despite your initial reply, we still want you to go through everything that you know you have gone through again, see. And on Monday, Tuesday, you will be the first person to speak and say, look, on reflection, I said this on Tuesday, what is it? Yeah. But, you know, and you know, I thought about it, I think, give me a more nuanced, careful response. So please don't not do what we requested you to do. You went several steps ahead of what we expected. Okay, Francis, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm not going to say a lot, but over and above what you've said.
I can ask you, William, just notice at the same thing. What about part implementation of the law? Is another option. Just to alert you, MP, we have done that. I think the municipal systems follow-up, where we said that the minister will regulate different parts of the bill to come into effect at different times. I think MP other bills have had that. That's another option, thank you, Advocate. But I'm not saying we do it. I'm throwing a whole lot of possibilities. Okay, over to you, Willie.
Thank you, Chair. No, much appreciated. I think the summary is spot on. I'm not even going to go there or even try to say what the Advocate agency has just said now. But safe to at least, Chair, saying that the text of the bill is, you know, based on our, you know, recommendations in terms of where we should amend and so on. I think that's what we have to produce and then submit to the committee based on those comments. And I'm sure there will be further engagement, of course, in the committee discussion. So that's one part. The second part that I want to just assure, and we've been saying this repeatedly, around the fact that the regulations this time, unlike the norm, will be, of course, consulted with, you know, the public, including our commitment that we made. The regulations will also be availed for discussion at NEPLEC. And I think we want to confirm, and it should be
right. Yeah, that helps. I was going to ask that. Good. Very good, Willie. Very good.
Yeah, we're going to take that back to it. And then the equally, Chair, what we also said, even the instructions that the Treasury currently issues from time to time, we also agree that we will make a provision in the bill that at least instructions will also be gazetted for the public to comment on them.
Good, good. Very good.
In the spirit of transparency before we have them. And of course, Chair, I think the other issues, I'm not even going to respond to them, but let me respond to this one around issues that pertain to transformation and the report that we we submitted to the committee. You know, sitting where I sit here, and if I were to be asked by black people to say, show us the 588 billion that we've been awarded, it was very difficult for me to answer the question. Now, our explanation is, in that regard, that remember that the measurement of the BEE is based on the broad-based nature of the BEE Act. So, in other words, what we say, there are many instances where, and I'll simply say this directly, where big business would normally ignore the ownership element of the scorecard, but at least prioritize the other elements of the scorecard, and then obtain a status level 1 or 2 and so on. So that issue is an issue that we've been talking about. You see, you would still find the fact that it's a broad-based nature of the BS, and therefore the fact that the 588 billion went to black people may not necessarily be black people. I want to underline black people. May not necessarily be correct. Hence, we say it may go to even a company that has, you know, simply decides to ignore or embrace the ownership element of the BEE. That's the point that we're trying to make, Chair. Then the last part that I want to talk to. Of course, if you look at the current system, the PPPFA, it has those two, you know, preference point systems, the 80-20 and the 90-10. And I think the point is made that in your contracts which are more than 50 million, you apply the 90-10, which of course accords to 11.1% maximum. That's a fact. But what we are saying here, because we don't have a formula here in this bill, and that formula, so we can't say the percentage in terms of the premium, what that premium would be. But we have said to stakeholders, and also in our public comments, that we are then moving the issues of the formula to be prescribed through regulations by the minister. And the public, of course, will also have comments in that particular issue to say what is affordable by the state and so on. And then we'll agree at the end of the day. Now, over the years, Chair, since the enactment of the PPPFA, blacks have always been saying, but the inclusion of the preference point system formula in the primary legislation is the problem. And that's exactly what, you know, results in people complaining and saying the PPPFA does not go far enough to address issues of transformation. Now we are saying we can't repeat that mistake and include in Chapter 4 or any part of the bill a formula of how premiums and how evaluation will be conducted. But to us, this is more a subject of regulation, and we'll engage, of course, with all stakeholders when it comes to that part. I thought I must just make that part, Chair, and because quite important in terms of transformation. There are other issues, of course, are issues that we can always deal with. In clause, in one of the clauses, clause 64.
Really?
Yes,
1247, no, hang on. And if you have to spill over 1 o'clock, fine. But there were specific questions put to you by several society stakeholders, and in fairness,
yes,
you have to reply specifically to them. And if you can't find the answers now, that's understandable. You can write and give it to us and forward it to them. So those specific questions, please remember to answer them.
No, great. Then I'm going to run through the specific questions now. The issue around the strategic versus operational issues that was, of course, raised by Luther. we know that issue. And in our view, the chapter 5 does make provision to a strategic approach, not only to what we would want to believe are strategic issues in the field, but I think the provision. Because what we've been saying, Chair, if you take the sector, I'm just talking myself, you take education, for instance, as a sector, and education will say to you, for us, LTSM, which is learner, teacher, support material, is quite critical. Even if you look at it as the pens and pencils or textbooks, but at the end of the day, for that sector, the procurement thereof should be strategic in nature. That's basically what we say. And hence, we provided the clause in chapter 25, which we believe is, you know, a comprehensive clause that will look at those issues. Further to that, in clause 64, we also make a specific, you know, reference to the procurement of infrastructure and capital assets, that the approach there should be strategic, and the details thereof will come in the form of regulations. In the bill, we're making this an aiming provision, but the bill will, of course, get into detail on what we mean. Because infrastructure in itself is wide as a sector. You've got rail, road, electricity, bulk water, ICT, and so on. Hence, we want to deal with each one of the individual infrastructure sectors as far as infrastructure is concerned. Now, the one other issue chaired by NRF around the same field, to say there would be a potential loss of the donor funds if we talk to STEMSEED. And I think it was raised by NRF as well as Willpower. Look, what we're saying, even now in the current budgetary process, you know, this is not a defense. We know that some government departments do not spend, they understand. And at the end of the day, they lose that money, it goes back to the National Revenue Fund. So equally, if you're talking, you're linking STEMSEED to the issue around the loss of potential donors, I think that fact you can always counter with the fact that in any event government departments do it. But further, Chair, in addition, why we have a STEMSEED is because we have introduced the tribunal as a mechanism to deal with some disputes. And it's important and also to make sure that this government is not litigated against while an aggrieved bidder has taken its matter back to the department for reconsideration or even to the tribunal. So hence we're saying the same thing is there, but what we've made a provision for exemption to say if there's any procurement that is agent that will potentially have an impact on service delivery, that this is an emergency provision that can always be invoked in those instances. So I thought that's just the part that I'm talking about. And the donor funding, at the Treasury, currently we have a unit that specifically manages donor funds. And hence we are saying donors must also comply with this thing. Because we don't want to create a, like, you know, we spoke about fragmentation in the system. So we're not going to have one system for donors that come from all over the world, and all of them wanted to impose their procurement prescripts on South Africa. We must have one rule for all donors, and if we need to apply at least exemption, let us do so. But it can't be free for all. Anyone getting donors and then they impose and say, you, for you to take this donation, you then need to follow my procurement rules. We can't work that way. At least we need to regulate that part.
Great.
Then, the other part, of course, we'll deal with the issues around specialists in a bid committee, that's fine. And I think we understand that part to say the bid committees must be pro-functional in nature. In our way, they must contain different expertise because you're dealing with all sorts of kinds of procurements in the country. And therefore, you need at least a variety of expertise when you're sitting in a bid committee. But that's something that we say we'll also look at when we look at the, I think, clause 29 of the bid. That's what we'll do. I think I've addressed the issue around standstill chair. The other issue I've dealt with is issue of the transformation that's specific around the DEA. And then I've also indicated that since we now work on the text of the bill based on our recommendations and the clauses that we're making, and then we'll make it available to the committee for consideration.
But don't rush it because there's quite a lot to do, right? So we're doing that on Tuesday because you know how this committee works, right? These MP will know. We first deal with policy issues, then we come to clause by clause. That's going to take a while. When we come to clause by clause, right? We first look at the policy issues. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. And then, Chair, around this 300-page submission that I've made, I mean, I'm looking at the deal. The deal itself is about 37 pages. Now you have a submission which is 333 pages. And we need to look at it. I'm sure we look at that, but over time. But given the time constraints that we have, and also our roadshows in ordinary participation sessions that we had around the country in various provinces, it was not possible for us to read 333-page submission, which must then inform a 37-page deal that is currently before the committee. I think it's a bit difficult for us to do so, but over time we look at the issues that are provided in that submission, including other submissions, dates, are and so on, as we committed even during the initial process, and see, you know, to what extent do those submissions inform the regulations going forward. And we'll do that, we'll read that and see to what extent do those inform. But it's highly unlikely that a 300-page document would find expression in the PMC. You know, no matter what way you look at this, it's quite impractical. Then, Chair, the issue around the definition of military veterans, I think that's something that we need to look at. We've heard that, that part. And then also around data privacy, we also did make at least a comment in the early opening of this meeting, Chair, to say we may not have covered everything in the presentation, but at least we implore the committee as stakeholders to read the report that we submitted because some of the issues are addressed in the report. I know that, for instance, in the case of the military, you know, veterans, there was also a comment around excluding certain people from submitting tenders because of the sensitive nature of the area that they operate in and so on. But some of these issues are covered in there. I think, Chair, I'm not so sure if I missed out anything, but I'm sure my colleagues here will remind me if there's anything. The issues around Parliament and legislature has already been cleared. But thank you very much, Chair. And I think you made a very important Chair comment around the fact that even if we were to sit here for 6 months or 12 months and say we want to even this, we're still going to have areas where we agree and we disagree. And thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity. Thank you.
Okay, as a presenter.
and in the regulations, but to include definitions of those in our views would not be appropriate. Then just on the safe implementation of the bill, clause 68 provides for the president to bring into operation by proclamation, and it further indicates that the proclamation that's still in different might be shown different dates and also different dates for different categories of institutions and also possibly different types of procurement. So there is an aiming for the...
Yeah, it's there, yeah. Oh. Okay.
And that's
okay. Thank you, colleagues. We are at the end. I want to take this opportunity once again to thank the stakeholders. I know you all put a lot of work in. You've written voluminously, I don't know how to pronounce the word, I think you're on a lot. Okay? And I like what you said, Willie, I hope you're going to be held accountable. Maybe we should put in the report that they said they would look more carefully or look further, or look again, or whatever the word is, if they will find this, or the community will together, as the regulations, as the submissions when they shape the regulations. Edging towards saying that Gabriel wants to ask a specific question. It can be done in writing the answer, but what is it now? Would you indulge to ask a specific question? Seems to have slipped through the cracks. Does the phrase national legislation section 35 include? Yeah, okay, that's a fair question. Can you answer that? That's a legal question, I think. You see it on the chat group. On the chat.
Yes, he did ask it in his input.
Yeah.
In my view, the reading of that section refers to both tables in Parliament. Because national legislation is not defined in the PSMA, but I think I understand where he's going. Because he might ask if we take relations in Parliament.
Right.
As part of the we also have to provide the funding implications for provinces.
Yes, okay, I get it. Okay, thank you. Excuse me. Yeah. So basically that's it. Now I want to remind members that Poppy and Zaka spent a lot of time growing up for Parliament. We saw, that was crazy, a breakdown on where BEE or BBBW has got. That report, Nkululeko, can you send it out to you? And we will table it for consideration on Tuesday. Also, because that work was done, and it can't just collect dust as it were. So we're going to look at that as well on Tuesday. We know the procedure in part, in the sense of you know, the broad outline, and then let's see where we get on Tuesday, and collectively discuss a way forward. In the meanwhile, we will send you the program, including a representative this morning, for the meeting ahead. You must remember, colleagues, I don't know who makes these decisions, but it changes sometimes dramatically. No plenary, the study days of plenary. Yes, there's a plenary, no, you don't have to take time. As far as I know, as far as we know, Nkululeko and I, the next sitting of the plenary is the 21st, which means we can sit all day next week Tuesday, in the morning and in the afternoon, and so on. We can discuss that, but we'll bring you a draft program, and you can reply by email. I know the election campaign is taking up a lot of our time, especially in the province like mine for my party. So, you know, we're taking that into consideration too. Okay, thanks very much.